Welcome to the Membership Machine Show, talking you through your membership website from initial idea all the way to finished product. Here's your host, Jonathan Denwood.
Welcome back, folks, to the Membership Machine Show. This is episode 115. In this episode, we're going to be discussing tips and tricks to grow your YouTube channel in 2025. If you've got a membership website, it's a great way of promoting your niche subject and getting students and growing a channel. I think if you've got any form of online business, is really important and growing in importance. I've got my great co-host with me, Nicole, and we're going to have some great thoughts to share on this interesting subject. So, Nicole, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Sure, yeah. Hi, my name is Nicole. My last name is Ouellette. You don't have to remember that. All you need to remember is I am technical support. I've had a marketing company for 17 years, and I love talking about this stuff. So thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's no problem. Like I say, we'll be going into the main things that you've got to understand that will help you and enable you to grow your YouTube channel in 2025. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great subject, I got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks, but before we go into the main topic of this show, I also want to point out that we've got a great free resource. If you're looking to build your membership website on WordPress, and I think you really should, it's basically a list of the best WordPress resources, plugins, services that will help you build your membership website really quickly. You can get these free goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, and also there's some special offers from the sponsors. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? I don't know, but there we go. So let's go straight into it. So Nicole, how important do you think it is for somebody trying to build any business online to have a growing YouTube channel, and specifically if they're into e-learning and trying to build a membership website?
Well, it's funny that you picked this topic this week, because I had something happen over the weekend that kind of directly...
I just sense it, Nicole.
I know. You know, if you're thinking about going to Vegas, I think this week is the time to do it. So basically what happened was I got an inquiry from a potential client through my little booking. And she's not friends with anyone I know. She lives in Hawaii. I know one person in Hawaii.
I'm not envious, Nika.
Yeah. So at the end of the call, I was like, I have to ask, how did you even find me? And she said, well, it's funny. I was using ChatGPT and I was asking it some questions, and it actually pulled some information and it referenced one of your YouTube videos. So then I started watching your content, and yeah. So, and then I wanted to kind of be connected with you. So I just thought it was, you know, we think of YouTube usually as, you know, the second largest search engine after Google and, you know, and all of that. But it's really interesting to know that these tools are indexing YouTube videos, and it can become just another way for people to... I would have never guessed that that is how somebody would find me in a million years. So, yeah. Apparently, YouTube is even has extra layers of influence that I never even thought of.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. But it, you know, I get a lot of inquiries from my YouTube channel, which has been growing. I put a lot of work into it. It's got over 1,500 videos on it.
Nice.
But it's grown in influence, folks, and I think its influence, its size and influence is growing with AI as well, because I think Nicole's example shows the power that's increasing, because it is indexed by these AI chatbots, and it's going to grow. And I think people that do consume your content like it, they will consume a lot more of it. They will have a bit of a binge. And if they're in the area, if they're interested in the subject, they might be interested in some of the services or products that you provide. So I just think it's a great way of promoting pre-launch or promoting in the early days or as you grow. I think a YouTube channel is all important if you're in the e-learning, the membership space. Obviously, YouTube does offer membership themselves, but it's for support, people supporting your channel. I would never use a platform to actually sell subscriptions. I would always have them separate on my own website for control reasons. But I just think if you're listening to any of these other podcasts and what's on both our YouTube channels, I think if you're looking to build credibility to your target niche audience, building a channel and building that audience, it doesn't have to be tens of thousands of people. It just needs the right people. So Nicole, what, you know, of what you've studied, what are some of the key things that you think people need to know in attempting to grow their channel?
Well, you know, as somebody who, I think I've had my YouTube channel for like 10 years and I've created content, you know, at different frequencies. Obviously, when I was creating on a really regular schedule is when I saw very regular growth. Because people, I think, and I'm not sure, actually, this is a good question for you, Jonathan. I've had people tell me that it's good to always post content, you know, like I had a weekly video release and I would release it on noon Eastern time on Friday, like a Friday afternoon. And I wasn't sure if those videos did well because I was regularly releasing them at that time, or if it was because my audience was kind of knowing that the content was going to go on at that time and they would come watch it. And part of what can boost your video is you getting a certain amount of watches, you know, in that first period of time that you upload the video, or maybe it was a combination of both. Do you think that that has like anything to kind of do with SEO? Because I feel like back in the day, blogging wise, you know, they used to always say you should post your blog, you know, at a set interval so that, you know, it would be well indexed. But I'm not sure if the same is true with YouTube videos. What's your experience with that?
Well, looking at a load of tutorials and online information, I think a lot of people would say when you published, it's just the regularity. It doesn't really matter to some extent if you're publishing one or two, three, four times a week, once a week, once every couple of weeks, once a month, but do it in the same day, the same time. Because I think what you touch upon, I think the people waiting for your content, I think that really, you really got to post one every week for that to kick in. I think the other bit is more to do with the expectations and the way that you are treated by YouTube. So regularity is probably important to start off with, more with YouTube than the audience. I think the other thing that I didn't realise, but through watching and consuming and studying, is too broad a niche subject is not a good idea. And it's very related to what I said about people when it comes to choosing a specific target audience or a specific subject for your first launch of your course. I think going too broad too quickly is very detrimental to growing a YouTube channel. And what I mean is finding a subject, a particular niche in a subject, a broad subject like health, technology, online marketing, it doesn't really matter. And then really finding a special niche area in that broader subject and sticking to, really thinking about, does that niche provide me enough subject matter to really continue publishing and not tempting to broaden it out into other subjects? Because it's very sophisticated technology, but when it comes to the SEO and the search, it's like going back into with a time machine, because you publish a subject, it can index and you can be top of YouTube search almost straight away. If you're in a niche, if you're in a particular niche, people tend to go too broad, too early, too quickly, and they don't really think about it and find a niche subject in a broader subject. What do you reckon?
And what you'll notice is even large YouTube people, if they have something else they want to do, they'll start a second channel. You know, so even if you do have like a broad audience, it's like these people have realized, okay, like if I have comedy here, but I also want to do a sort of lifestyle podcast or something, I'm going to set up the second channel. That's what I see a lot of large YouTubers doing. And I think that it kind of shows that this niche thing is important, even if you do have a larger base to work from than the average small business owner that might be listening to this.
Yeah, it really confuses YouTube, and it really will harm your ability to grow the channel. So please, you know, if you get anything from this podcast, and if you're watching it on YouTube, it's really, because I've learned the hard way myself. Now, key research, it's very similar to blogging. It's very tempting just to think of a title and you're really interested in a particular subject and off you go, you make a video. It's very unlikely that it's going to be found, and it's very unlikely it's going to build your channel. You really got to do some keyword research, and you don't have to actually spend money. You can just start typing into YouTube search, and it will come down with a list. And
oh, that's a good idea.
There's a free tool, and it's going to be in the show notes, which you'll find on the WP Tonic website. And it's a free tool from Backlinko, who are well known in the SEO area. He's well known, but he's really concentrated on now YouTube. He's got a free service as well. And it's called, like I say, you'll find the link to that, but it's called Grow Your YouTube Channel.
Well titled.
Yeah, it's to the point. And there's some paid services. They're not outrageous. The one I use is VidIQ, and another one I use is TubeBuddy. One TubeBuddy, I think if you get it on a special deal, you can get it for 40 $1,000 a year, where I think vidIQ offers more services, but it's about $20 a month. If you pay month to month, I think you can get it down to $16 a month if you pay yearly. And these paid services, they give a lot more through a Chrome or a Firefox add-on plugin. So they're in your search bar. They can suggest keywords, and they are quite helpful. But doing research about what the subject of what your video is going to be, the title, and what it's going to be is, I think, quite crucial. What do you think, Nicole?
It's something that, honestly, I need to start doing a little bit more, to be honest with you. And I'm kind of glad for having this conversation, because I'm going to go to those links after the show to make my YouTube titles a little bit better keyword-wise, because most of how people are finding me, oddly enough, when I look at my website stats, so what I do is I like make a blog entry with every YouTube video. So I put, you know, the show notes and, you know, the YouTube embed on my blog, and then I also have it on YouTube. Most of the views that it's getting are off of my website, where I feel like I'm adding a lot more context. So I need to kind of do the same thing that I do there on my actual YouTube channel, I think.
Yeah, it's something that we all, I was quite resistant on, but I learned my lesson, and it did start to make, after a few months, you really did see the channel grow substantially. The other fact is, if you get past 5,000 subscribers, it will grow even more, because the actual YouTube suggests your channel to a lot more new people.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's really important to grow it over 5,000 subscribers. And also, I think it's 1,000 subscribers, or it could be a bit higher. You can then monetize your channel.
Yeah, it's 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours in a calendar year.
Yeah.
So just kind of putting that out there.
And even if you don't plan to monetize it, I would still, after you get 1,000 or the hour, I would still, when they send you the link, I would still fill in and apply, because I also think that is another way that YouTube judges your channel, is it monetized? You know, have you gone through the process? So I definitely
And just in case someone's listening who hasn't done this, it gives you the option when you upload a YouTube video to turn on monetization or not for each video. So you could go through the process, apply, get accepted. And if you don't want ads in your videos, YouTube is going to put ads in your videos anyway. I'll just say that. But if you didn't want them for whatever reason, you can just, when you upload videos, just keep monetization turned off. So it's on for the channel, but it's off for each individual video upload. So that is an option in case someone's listening and wondering about that.
Yeah, anything they offer you, I'll suggest you take it up, because they are, what I've watched and read, it's definitely, it's a combination of different factors, folks.
Yeah.
Some of them are quite small. Now, I think doing the SEO research, you know, finding a niche in a broader subject, not going too broad and keeping to that niche, really important. Doing keyword research and applying that research to your title of your video, really important. Third really important thing is the thumbnail, and spending time on the thumbnails. I think the title, the niche, and the thumbnails are some of the biggest things that will move your channel forward. Now, obviously, you've got to provide information. It's got to be entertaining or informative. But I think the thumbnail is like the third and also really important. What do you reckon?
You know, I will say, as somebody who also resisted this, I think it is important. And if you don't think it is, and you want to sort of like check in with yourself about it, there's a Reddit subreddit called Small YouTubers. And about half of the stuff people post in there is like, what do you guys think of this thumbnail? And I'll tell you, if you don't care about your own thumbnails, once you see some stranger's thumbnails and they say, do you like A or B better? You're going to definitely see, oh yeah, no, B is definitely better. And reading the comments, people are, you know, talking about why it's better and things like that. So if you're one of those people who just is like, I don't even know where to start, just sometimes like kind of watching people have those conversations on a forum like that can be helpful, because I didn't think I cared about thumbnails, but once I saw some really bad ones, in my opinion, I thought, oh, okay. I get what makes a good one. Now that I've seen some bad ones, it's all, you know, is helpful. How did you learn how to make good thumbnails?
Yeah, well, I just watched a lot of advice and edit, but sure. Got some tips here for you folks. Canva provides is a great service, the free, but I would pay for Canva, the paid version. It's about $120, I think, $110, something around there.
For the year.
I use it almost every day, every week. They provide a good library of thumbnail templates, which you can then adapt. Don't keep the wording on the thumbnail down. You don't have to have the full wording of the title. You just need the essence. And I have a portrait of myself. I always have a picture of myself in the thumbnails. What I did was I got some professional portraits of myself done. And then I used, there's some AI services. You can upload the one I did, and I will attempt to put it in the show notes. You had to upload a number of photographs of yourself up to their service. I used some of the pro photos, and then I took some photos of myself using my iPhone, but that you had to upload, I can't remember how many, and you upload them to this service, which was about $50 to $70, and they produced 100 different images of yourself in different poses, and you can download them. It did take a morning, because I had to upload more examples than I thought I would have to, but it's still... You know, if you went to a photographer, they charge a considerable amount of money per photograph. So I had three or four professional ones, and then I took some. But it was the quality what the AI service produced. It was very impressive. And I've got 100 different headshots, body headshots in different poses. And it was all done by AI.
Oh, interesting. I was kind of smiling a second ago because there was a study that they did of different people's expressions in different YouTube thumbnails. And like the most, the one that was the most prevalent was surprise.
Yeah, well, it works though.
Yeah. So don't be, I don't know. Some of this stuff makes me cringe. Like, I can't quite do
that. Yeah, well, you've got to make your mind up. You're gonna be a bit self-righteous about it, or you're just going to get on with it.
Sure.
I take the middle ground. I don't do many of the surprise. I just make sure it's a good portrait picture of me smiling in it or looking a bit grumpy. It all matches, so I gone for that kind of middle ground.
Do you
but it has made it, it has g- getting those photos done and then using one of these AI services. So I've got a whole library of different portrait pictures.
Do you find that the grumpy ones get more views?
I haven't. That's the other thing we're going to talk. I spend a lot of time in Google Console, but I don't spend enough time in my YouTube analytics.
Yeah, me either.
Which you should do, because the videos that are, there will be videos that are doing a lot better. Mm-hmm. And if you can analyze in your own mind why they're doing better, I suggest you should make more of those ones.
Absolutely.
But it's something I'm probably going to, I've got it up to about, I think it's slightly under 8,000 subscribers now.
Nice.
I want to get it up to, in about 6-7 months, up to 18,000. So I need to spend more time on the analytics. But you find a lot of people that are growing, they do spend a lot of time in the analytics and looking at them. But I think sorting out using Canva and then getting a library of portraits and personalizing the thumbnails, you're going to get considerable benefit in spending time on the thumbnails, on the titles, and finding the right niche in a broader category. I personally think these are three of the biggest things that will enable you to get over 5,000 up to 10,000 subscribers. And looking at the analytics, those four things, I think they're the four biggest things that can drive your channel so you break through that 5,000 to 10,000 barrier.
Well, I can't speak to the 5,000 to 10,000 barrier because I'm not there yet. But one thing that helped that I would add to this list is collaborating with other people who have YouTube channels, whether that's creating content with them, whether that's sharing to each other's communities. That's what helped me actually get over, because I was at the 1,000 subscriber mark, but I didn't have enough watch hours. And some of my YouTube friends kind of told their groups, hey, like, let's help Nicole get there. And so people like watched my videos and kind of helped me get over that initial hump of a 1,000.
I haven't done any friends, Nicole.
You do. You're friends with all the WordPress people and stuff that come on your podcast.
Oh, I'm not sure that I'm that friendly with some of them. But you can't be friends with everybody, can you, Nicole?
You can't. But if you do have some fellow people, in your YouTube niche, don't see them as, they're not competition. They're people. And again, like, if you don't believe me, like, look at some of these larger creators. They'll collaborate with each other. They'll post stuff to, social media together. They'll do videos together. So just like kind of think how you want to work with the people who are also in your space. And if you don't, that's fine. But at least you've thought through kind of how and if you want to do it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think we've delved through some really great stuff in this first half. We're going for our mid-break. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Conversio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Conversio at conversio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back. Before we go into the second half and then more tips and insights about growing your YouTube channel, I'm going to throw you over to Nicole, and she's going to tell you something about her great service, Trend to Send. Over to you, Nicole.
Right. So if you're trying to grow your YouTube channel and you think, wow, these are great tips, but I want even more, another tip before they even get to the second half of the show, consider posting trending video content. I have gotten multiple subscribers in the last month coming off of my YouTube shorts. And I have found that my trending videos that I post to YouTube shorts get at least double the views of the short clips that I take from my longer form content. So Trend to Send, what I do is I track trends across YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. I find one usable, actually you get two a week, but I send one at a time so as not to overwhelm. You get a usable trend and links to the trending audio on those three platforms, allowing you to create one video that gets a lot of traction that is also very short. So check out trendtosend.com if you're interested in learning more.
That's fantastic. Right, so let's go into another area where I, at the present moment, I've been, I wouldn't say resistant, but I know I got up the game, but I really want to grow the channel before I go to this next step.
Okay.
And that's watch time. It's under the subject of watch time.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go into the area which I plan to up my game, but not quite yet, and I want to explain my logic behind it. Some of the facts that the research I did for this show is that long-form videos seem to definitely do better. You know, long-form, something over 10 minutes or longer. I think also there seems to be, like what Nicole's service promotes, you've got these short-form videos that for Instagram, TikTok and YouTube, because YouTube's really promoted that. But I think if you're not specifically making things for short form, I think you should probably look at longer form video, because really YouTube seems to be going in two directions at the same time. They really promoted their short form service, but they also promoted their podcasting, which is traditionally long form. Like this show, you can find this show on YouTube. I do a basic edit. I do put, you know, I put in adverts from the sponsors, and I do a basic edit. And having a decent intro, getting an intro. All my other videos do have an intro placed in them. I went to Fiverr. I found a specialist that's had a good portfolio, and he was excellent to work with. So I got the intro. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to be ridiculously expensive, but I definitely think you should invest in a professional intro. And I haven't invested in an ending, but I think if you can invest in both, that's a good idea. But
people are very impressed by it when you have one. They're like, oh, at least in my experience.
Right. But I think it's well worth the money, because it's not going to cost you, it's not going to cost you a fortune. But I think you need to look at the length of the videos. Now, where the thing, it's called pattern interrupts. Basically, I haven't invested in professional editing. I haven't got the time really to do it myself. I have utilized professional editing software, DaVinci, Premiere, and Final Cut, and I got up to a reasonable standard on Final Cut. I wasn't a pro or anything, but I knew more than the basics. But I just haven't got the inclination or the time with. So I would have to hire a video editor There's like Upworks, Fiverr. Actually, to start off with, there seems to be a better selection on Fiverr because I've been looking at hiring an editor, and I probably will do this in the next 6 months. I have an editor for my podcasts. I have somebody that edits the audio for me and makes sure that the quality, and they've all got professional intros, the audio podcasts of these shows. But getting a professional editor and getting graphics, cutbacks, having two cameras, depending on what recording software you got, we're using StreamYard for this. You can use multiple cameras, and I have got a setup, and you can use a device called Stream Deck, and that provides buttons where you can move from one camera, and I have actually got one of their mini decks. I've just not used it. I do have a two camera setup here and with Stream Deck, and then, but it's only worth employing if I'm going to utilize either do more editing myself or get a professional editor. But they do reckon that it increases your viewing hours dramatically and cuts down dropout from your videos. I think it's the next step up. If you get the first things that we talked about in the first half of this show, I think when you got those and you're moving the channel in the right direction, then I think it might be the right time to look at either doing more editing yourself or hiring an editor. What do you think, Nicole?
You know, as an experiment, and granted, I would have to do this more. I did this for one of my videos, you know, the slow zoom at parts, you know, the emoji popping up or the stock footage, you know, that like there's ways to do the pattern interruption, right? And I did one about approximately every 10 seconds for this video, and it's about a 35 minute. It took me hours longer to edit this video. Yeah. Like, and I didn't get that many more views on it. And I was like, the idea of doing this again, I was a little bit discouraged about it. But like you said, like if you're at that point of hiring an editor, because it's one thing, right? Like you've planned the video and you've recorded the video and maybe you've done like a rough edit of the video to kind of get the content you want right. But adding all those things in is, I think it took me an extra like 6 or 7 hours to edit that video.
Yeah, because you're probably looking between $150 to $100 per video offshore to get somebody who has basic skill ability offshore. Filipinos, Bangladesh, India. I think then to get somebody more experienced, even offshore, you'd be looking between $200 and $500 a month, depending on how many videos. I've got a special rate for my audio editor, but I pay 3 months in advance, and he's been working for me. He's been working for me for about 6 years. We've got a good understanding, and we've got a good system, so he gives me a special rate. He's a great guy. He's been rock solid. Some of the things they've on the resources that I did for this particular, the research resources I did for this particular show, they listed a number of things connected to what they call pattern interrupts, and that's on-screen graphics. Like I say, I do intro, but they're talking. There are people that utilize screen capture software. So they go to if they're talking about products, services and products online. They go to these products and services website and then they have a floating head of themselves. I've chosen not even to do that because I'm not sure. I just literally, for most of my videos, I look straight into the camera and I just talk. I don't totally script out the video. You can buy auto cue equipment. So you've got, you can script the whole video out. I forced myself and I've done so many videos now that it doesn't feel odd to look straight at the camera because when you're starting, it feels very awkward. It doesn't bother me anymore. But I look straight into the camera, but I do research and I do write out, bullet points and topics and I sectionize the video and I work out in my brain what are going to be the 3 to 4 sections. So it's not totally unplanned and I do the research before the video. So it is formulated a bit, but when I'm actually looking in the camera, I'm not using an auto cue and I just go for it. Unless I make a major mistake, I normally just do it in one take now. I can do it in one take and I can just literally waffle on. But I do try and keep to my pre-bullet point lists because that stops me from truly waffling off. So animations, I think you've got to get really serious. But obviously there's resources out there. There are animation resources, libraries that you can pay a subscription to have access to, news background or setting B-roll basically, different camera angles. I mentioned that. I have got a 2-camera, sound effects, bullet lists, and planning your videos in advance, which I do. I think some of these things you can do and they will make a difference to your videos without enormous costs. I think there's a middle ground where I think if you've got a certain size of audience and you want to grow it to the next level, I think investing in an editor to do at a certain level is probably a good investment.
I agree.
I think I would have to be really persuaded to go, because I know the amount of time involved in video editing to do it at a quasi-professional level. And also, I think there's the other factor that I want to discuss with you, Nicole. I think people, I think too sophisticated a video, especially on a platform like YouTube, can be a two-edged sword because I think people are looking for credibility for the word is escape me and not credibility.
Authenticity?
Yeah, that's what they're looking for, isn't it? They're looking for somebody that seems to know what they're talking about and you are having that one-to-one conversation with people. It's got a little bit of what radio and podcasting is about to me. What do you reckon, Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think having a little raw realness is totally fine. I think it is nice, like the last video I uploaded, which granted hasn't been doing very well, I talked about you know, different pathways to it, like how to get a logo if you need one. And so I talked about different services and I was talking about the services and the editing process. I showed like the website and how to get to the parts where you could see the examples and things like that. I think that was kind of a good amount of editing that I could handle, like to add some elements to it. But at the same time, like you wouldn't look at that video and say, oh, wow, this was very professionally produced. So I don't know, like as somebody who couldn't even reach a level where somebody would feel bamboozled by my flashiness, I don't think it's a problem I'm going to have for a long time, if ever, personally. But yeah, I agree. I think people want to, they want to hear from other real people who know what they're talking about and are
interested. Yeah, I wouldn't say I was resistant, but I think getting these other factors and really showing that you, obviously you've got to have some knowledge in the area that you're talking about, or you've got to provide something to the audience that they value. I think doing all these things, if there's nothing at the core of what you're providing, it won't have the effect. But I think you can have really good content, and if you don't do the things that we've talked about in this in this podcast and this video, your growth isn't going to occur, which would be a great shame. When it comes to the last thing with this, like I say, I placed it at the bottom. I think some of the biggest influencers on YouTube, they have almost professional quality studios. They have a team of editors, a sound editor. They have staff, basically. That is not at the same level as traditional television, but it's a bit different than somebody. I invested about $1,500. I've got lighting all around me. I've got a professional camera in front of me. I've got reasonable audio. I've decided not to use an audio external deck. I've still gone with a USB mic, but it's a Rodeo one, and it did cost me about $230. And the camera, the lens on the camera cost me about $400. $600. The camera cost me $600. And I've got lights all around me. So it's a reasonably sophisticated rig that I invested in. You can get started just spending a couple of hundred. Funny enough, the main thing you've got to be concerned about is the audio and the lighting. So I think there's a middle road here. And I think if you really start getting traction, I think the next step is to have two cameras and hire a offshore editor, but don't go gradually do it. How would you respond to what I've just said, Nicola?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that when I started, I had no lights and I had like a small Shure microphone that was about $100. And then when I moved, like I have studio lights right now, because if I didn't, like, I'd be sitting in the dark. What I did when I first started was I would just only record during the day, so I had sunlight. but what the lights allowed me to do was sort of extend my recording times and options. So like I slowly kind of built up the setup that I have, which is a little bit less than what you have. I don't like, the room I'm in is really small, so I can't really do like cool depth of field stuff like you have in your setup, in terms of having things lit behind me and all that. But I do have studio lights. I have a better microphone than what I started with, and I have, technically, I think I have a 4K camera. But that was my last purchase, and that
well, they used to go on about 4K. And I think it does matter if you're hiring an editor. Because
it gives them options. They can zoom more.
But I think if you're not hiring an editor, I don't really think it does. I don't think it matters that much. But all the YouTube influencers around building a YouTube channel, they all go on about 4K, and I understand why they go on about it, because a lot of them come from a background of photography. And, you know, the larger the file quality and density of info, the more you can manipulate the photos. And it's the same with video. But unless you're going to do a lot of editing, it really doesn't matter, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I will say that, like, so if you're not a super technological person and you feel intimidated by this process, like, so the first thing I bought was the microphone, and it's an Elgato microphone. When you go on their site, they have the Elgato key lights. They have the Elgato camera. So they have the Elgato whatever stream deck. I'm not even sure if that's how you pronounce the name of this company, but so sometimes, like, you know, if you feel a little intimidated, like if you have something in a product line, typically they have other supporting products that'll work together. What I will say I like about this camera though, is it has separate software. So for example, like if I wanted to go in and adjust the colors and all that before we recorded, you know, I could have it in a way that I couldn't with my $100, you know, pandemic special webcam. You know what I mean? Like I have a little bit more control over sort of what the recording looks like, which obviously helps in the editing process because I have less color correction and stuff like that to do. But yeah, I mean, I ended up just getting the camera because it was just like part of this product line that I felt comfortable with and whose software was already on my computer. So sometimes you can just make decisions like that too, but it doesn't have, like Jonathan said, it doesn't have to be all at once. You can kind of, you know,
yeah, because a lot
parts now, at a time.
Fundamentally using your iPhone, any modern iPhone, it has a camera on it that is amazing quality. So basically you can use your iPhone. It's just having just the audio. People will not put up with really rubbish audio. But basically, you don't need to go. The other thing is you can go and buy a Logitech webcam, 4K webcam. I've got one that I don't use for this recording, but it's a 4K. It costs about 170. It's going to be my second camera when I do use my Stream Deck and go for a 2K. Camera setup, and it's amazing. But like I say, you can either use a webcam 4K or use your iPhone. I might use my iPhone for a third camera. You got a lot more choice now. My main camera is a Canon 50, but I had to because I was going to look in the camera and I wanted depth. I had to buy a Stigma lens, Stigma lens, and that cost almost as much as the camera cost. And I really didn't want to pay it, so I looked at some other options and they didn't work out. And I had to buy the bullet, and it's been well worth the investment, but it almost cost as much as, or a little bit more than the camera cost. But now, to finish off, how do you, because I found you basically watching some of your fantastic reviews of other marketing gurus, but how do you, you know, do you have that on a separate channel to your company channel, or have you mixed it up?
And it's all together.
And are you thinking of separating or not? Because that comes around the niche, doesn't it? You know,
right.
it's giving, this is the strange thing about YouTube, highly sophisticated platform, gigabyte, trilobytes. I don't know what they must have when it comes to actual data. They must have some of the biggest server centers, or, you know, it's Google, but God knows how much YouTube in the infrastructure it costs. Because,
yeah,
like I say, but on the other hand, if you don't give them what they want in the same thing, if it's too diverse, you just don't get the growth on your channel. So what are your thoughts about this, Nicole?
Well, my channel talks about marketing. So I review marketing gurus, I give marketing tutorials, and I will say my education content does not do very well. That said, whenever I have somebody who like finds it and really appreciates it, they're like, thank you for making this. Like, you know, I don't know why no one has made a video like this before and stuff like that. So people, you know, it's like, I feel like I give them their spoonful of sugar with their medicine, you know what I mean? So there's some tutorial content, but it's all about marketing. So to me, like, I wouldn't like post content about something that wasn't that. So I think it all kind of fits in terms of a niche. That said, I do think YouTube has a hard time categorizing what I am. And most of my subscribers come from YouTube suggestions and basically like outside of my particular, you know, profile. So I know that new people are seeing it, which is good. And I know that my little shorts, you know, it's a little bit of bait in the water and the fish bites on, and the longer form content is what is going to reel them in. Right. So, to me, it's like a little tool in my tool belt, but it's not the whole thing. I want to keep making content like I'm making. My personal issue is I don't really have a space. For example, my boyfriend is currently staying at the office until I'm finished recording this because there's no room. And I did have some room in my co-working space, but I ended up renting out those offices. So now I don't have an office there anymore. So I'm like, I got to figure out a literal space that I can record content on a regular basis without disrupting the lives of other people. So I think that's the thing I really need to ultimately figure out. I do have ideas for videos and things that I want to do. It's just difficult to find a time to be able to record them, unfortunately. And I do think I need to like do more keyword stuff and more thumbnail stuff. And I'm really kind of, I'm glad we had this conversation because I feel like I learned a lot from having it. So I think I'm going to keep everything on the channel. I think I need to come up with a regular posting schedule and to optimize the content I'm already doing. What about you? What are your...
Well, I'm in a similar... Because I want to make you totally clear, I wasn't having a go at you because I just wanted to point... I just wanted to point out that this is tricky, folks, because it's not exactly the same as Nicole, but I just want to tell you... I started my YouTube channel because it was really based on I just uploaded my podcasts. And before I did the Membership Machine show, I did a podcast that's really called the WP Tonic show. And it's really aimed at the WordPress freelancer, developer, the WordPress pro level amateur or the professional, really. That's who it's aimed at. That's its audience. It's one of the major shows in that sector, which isn't a very large sector, but it is one, and I've been doing it for almost 8 years. But it's introduced me to a lot of WordPress people, some of the biggest people in the WordPress space. And I get a bit of sponsorship that covers some of the costs. And I make a little bit of money from it. But it really is not aimed at my target audience that I actually make money from, which is people who look at SaaS or look at WordPress and decide for the right reasons, in my opinion, to build their membership community website on WordPress technology, because that gives you the most ownership. And I think ownership in 2025 is a pretty important subject, right? Because everybody wants a bit of you and want you to build their platform, and they're not there to help you build your own business, right? But the problem is I put videos on my YouTube channel. I have some of these videos that are about WordPress, and you could say I build membership on WordPress. So it sounds not too bad, but I think, like you, I think YouTube, I've done these other things and it started to grow, but I think on reflection, I needed to have two channels, one for membership and one for the WP Tonic. But WP Tonic is the name of my company where we host membership and community websites and help people and consult them. So you would have thought it would work, but I think in some ways YouTube's pretty dumb. This is the strange thing about it. It's high sophistication. But I think a lot, this is my advice to you listeners, because it's got to be a simple niche and you've got to stick with it. It's very, because I think there's a lot of people like Nico and myself for various reasons, and we don't get the traction that we should because we're not giving precisely what YouTube wants. Is this making sense, Nicole?
Yeah, and I think the other thing, and I think you kind of brought it up and it's a good way to maybe start closing this out, is it's not, growing subscribers is a fine goal, but sometimes the reason to have a YouTube channel isn't to grow subscribers. Maybe it's to establish yourself as a WordPress expert. Maybe it's to meet certain kinds of people, you know? Like,
you're so right, but you're so wrong. That you're right and wrong in the same breath, because everybody, oh, you've only got so many subscribers. And it's a bit like email lists. You know, right. You talk to somebody for sponsorship. Well, I've only got 1,500. Oh, we don't even consider sponsoring unless you've got 5,000 email subscribers. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, you know, those 1,500, almost 60% open it every month.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, Nicole. The market's only looking for, but you are right. So it's time for, because Nicole needs to go off. So what is the best place for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
They can find me on technicalsupport.com and as technical support on various social media channels.
Oh, the cat's appeared. A tail just poked up if you're watching.
Yeah.
Need to watch the video. If you want to support the show, you can go to the WP Tonic YouTube channel and watch it. Or you've got any questions, you can put them on the video. Or you can join the Membership Machine Show Facebook group, which is totally free. We will be back next week. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Membership Machine Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and leave a rating to support the show. Until next time.